Tim Goldstein, autistic adult, and your host for Life in a Neurotypical Universe, where we take a look at life from the perspective of an autistic adult. I'm going to stop saying that this is a very special edition of Life in the Neurotypical Universe, because there really is no such thing as a normal edition of Life in the Neurotypical Universe. Just like all of us humans, where there's no such thing as normal, there really is no such thing as a normal edition. But in this case, we have Dr. Dave from Vanderbilt's Frist Center of Autism, and he and I had a great time chatting. While we were chatting, we again just kept the recorder going. And we ended up with really enough material to make 3 episodes. I edited them into breaks to make them reasonable length episodes. With that, we'll join into the show.
And to be clear too, it's not a trivial exercise to engage in. Just like you and I can have difficulty communicating with neurotypicals, businesses have a lot of difficulty communicating with academia or with nonprofits. They use the same words very differently. You know, corporations, when they talk about research, it's really just marketing. They do research in such a way to show how awesome they are or how great the product is. By its very nature, it's sort of biased. And in academia, that's the kiss of death. Academia uses words like research and study very, very, very carefully, because we understand autistic and neurotypical alike, we all have biases. We all tend to inflate. If we decide that one outcome is more important or is preferred over the other, any evidence we get that supports that outcome, we tend to exaggerate and put up on a platform. And any evidence that we could be wrong, we tend to trivialize or discount or kind of push to the side. This is a human thing. In academia, we understand that. We come face to face with our own biases all the time. And imperfectly, we try to combat those biases. And so it's hilarious, because I see sometimes when I've got a corporate rep on one side and an academic rep on the other side, and they're communicating, sometimes it devolves into fights that come out over miscommunication. And you got to step in there and you have to explain, no, this is what this person means when they say this, and this is what this person means when they say this. And then they both go kind of, aw. And then the conversation becomes a little bit more productive. And now they're kind of understanding each other. So it's not a trivial thing to get all these different parts kind of working together. Sometimes the miscommunications can really kill a program before it can get started.
I think that in the communication, one of the challenges I refer to is grain, and grain comes from the concept of databases. So when you're talking about grain, you mean how frequently are these measurements? So a grain could be, you measure something once an hour, so it's at an hourly grain, or once a day, or once a week, whatever. And I think one of the challenges in communication is essentially we work at different grains. As people who are autistic, we tend to want to be very precise in our wording, and we know lots of details about the things we know because we were interested in them, and we know every one of those details is important. So if we leave out a detail, you're not giving quite the full story. So, from a granularity standpoint, we have a very fine-grained knowledge of whatever we tend to dive into. But yes, Often you're talking to somebody on the business side who doesn't have that fine-grained knowledge of that area. I mean, they reverse the roles, put it into the business realm, and we're going to be the ones with the lacking the fine grain, and they're going to have the fine grain. But, in other things, it's not.
And to sort of flip it on its head, one of the cognitive strengths that neurotypicals have is that they can get vague hand-wavy instructions or vague hand-wavy concepts and make decisions and push forward.
Yes.
They can take an imperfect big picture and run with it, where that sort of thing could paralyze someone like you or I.
I like to say, I like to know where the landmines are before I go running into that field. And that takes a little time to scope them out first, when the manager just wants you to go run in the field.
Yes.
And you're right. The neurotypical in that case just goes, runs in the field, hits a bunch of landmines, and the manager says, good, you went out and did what I wanted. And to me, they go, well, when are you going to get started? And the answer is, I am started. I'm going to make sure I can go way faster than that person that just blew up.
Right. I would argue that there are regimes and situations where just running through the landmine and setting off a few mines is better than sitting there and carefully scoping them all out. In those cases, we are a poor fit.
Right.
But there are other cases where those landmines become so important that our way is the correct way.
Correct. Correct. Just in communicating with neurotypicals from, you know, being, and again, I'm going to say I'll talk about more the Asperger style, which I'm still upset that we don't use that as an official type of diagnosis anymore, because I think it clearly defined a particular manifestation. There should be other names for other manifestations, I agree, but I think it was really good that it, you know, if you said you have Asperger's, everybody kind of has a general idea. If you say you have autism, nobody has an idea what you really are like to deal with.
Right. To play a little bit of devil's advocate, I was very fortunate because at the time that they had done this, I was a grad student and I had understood a little bit better the scientific method. And I had the opportunity to go out and speak to scientists in the field and say, you know, why did you guys do this? What was your justification? What was the line of thinking there? And how it was explained to me is the reason they did away with it is they could not find a way to do a test to test the difference between, at the time, there was also official diagnosis of high functioning autism.
Right.
And you could go into one clinic and get 100% for sure diagnosis of Asperger syndrome and cross the street and go to another clinic and get a 100% for sure diagnosis of high functioning autism. So there was some confusion in the data sets. And so they talked together, and because they couldn't come up with a test to differentiate between one or the other, that's what led them to do away with the official Asperger diagnosis. Because from a scientific perspective, it was not clearly defined, and they couldn't get a clear definition that could find one or the other. So from a scientific perspective, what they did made a lot of sense. One of the things I try to tell my fellow Aspies, because you're not alone in this, most Aspies blew their tops when it happened. I pointed out to them, we have a right and a justification to call ourselves whatever we want.
Right.
I happen to agree with you that I feel like Asperger's is a wonderful handle to cover a specific subset of the spectrum. It's generally people on the spectrum who don't have too many cognitive delays. They're probably above average intelligence. They're probably don't have too many severe sensory issues, at least not to such a frequent point that has crippled them in some manner. And they're hyperverbal, or at least very verbal. They're probably really well read. They're probably very verbal. So they don't have a lot of delays or shortcomings other than maybe communicating with neurotypicals and interacting productively in a social manner. And so it is a very useful label. And I like to use the term Aspie. I love that term. I like to use it for myself. I like to use it casually when I'm talking to other people on the spectrum. And I probably use it more liberally than that. You know, if I speak to another person who is autistic and they're verbal and able to put together complete sentences, I call them an Aspie. And I don't care what their IQ is or whatever delays they have. To me, they're an Aspie. And I use that as a term of endearment.
Yeah, I guess I would look at Aspie to me is almost, it's agreeing with what you're saying. For most things in most situations, we have enough capabilities that a neurotypical would not pick up that we're particularly different. But certainly some of that leaks through occasionally.
Yeah.
And whether, yeah, somebody has an IQ at 145 or they're at 100, they can still just be an Aspie. I mean, there's no, to me, there, you know, that isn't what determines it. I almost would like to see intellectual disability pulled out as its own thing. Because where you fall on you know, in autism and where you fall in intellectual disability are not necessarily aligned. I mean, you can have somebody who displays, you know, low autism traits but heavy intellectual disability or vice versa.
Yeah, but in some ways, if you think about it this way, the scientific community gave us a gift. We are now free to use Asperger's or Aspie, however we feel like we want to use it.
Right. We freed up the word.
You don't have to have an official diagnosis for me to call you an Aspie.
Right.
Or for me to think of you as an Aspie, or for one to think of themselves as an Aspie. And in some ways, we've kind of been liberated.
Going down that path, one thing I've run into when I've dealt with a number of different self-advocates, and we'll say maybe a little bit more radically leaning self-advocates, is they want to explain to neurotypicals in the finitest of details about all the variations between neurodiversity and neurodiverse and neurodivergent and neurotypical, and make it into such a complex thing that I think when you're talking to most neurotypicals, again, it's that grain difference. You're telling them stuff that's so far beyond their level of understanding so far that they can't even make value out of what you're saying. You've got to, and again, right. I think this is your journalism background. You've got to bring it down to the level of your audience, recognizing you're giving up some detail, but also recognizing your audience, that's the level that they're going to be able to engage at least today. Now, tomorrow, after another article, maybe they can step up a little bit.
You know, when I was trained in journalism, and I was a journalist while I was in the Army, I was a military journalist. One of the things that initially upset me profoundly is we had to write at a fifth grade level. We were told that was the proper reading level that the bulk of our audience would be able to effectively read and follow along with the story. Even then, my vocabulary was not expansive as it is now, but I still had a pretty expansive vocabulary. I was upset I couldn't use any of my big complex words because they're so precise. But I have to say, it was one of the greatest gifts that fate ever gave me. Because taking a complex topic and trying to break it down into a fifth grade level really generalizes the message. You lose some of that fidelity. You lose some of that grain that you're talking about, but you can get the message to a much broader audience and you can be more well understood. And that's the ultimate goal of conversation, right? Communication is to be understood.
Right. And I think that's where oftentimes as advocates, we're running into an issue of advocates not being effective. Because they're trying to talk as if you and I were off talking just by ourselves and we'd be using bigger words and things like that, instead of recognizing in this kind of conversation, we're talking to a broad general audience. We're not going to dig into autism at the level that we know it from living it for our entire lives. We're going to dig into it at a level that helps start educating people. And I know a lot of self-advocates have a challenge with not giving the full complete set of details that they don't feel as if they're educating the other person appropriately.
Well, I have some advice for those autism self-advocates.
Please.
First of all, I want to say to anyone listening who's an autism self-advocate, thank you. And recognize how special and unique you are, because people like you and I, people who are willing to throw ourselves out there and speak publicly about autism, we are a tiny minority, even in the Asperger community and stuff. Many Aspies are afraid of being viewed as less than human or being viewed as defective if they throw that out there. So they work really hard to maintain the mask that I'm just a normal person like everyone else. And you know, those of us who are willing to step out and throw ourselves out there are kind of like doing a favor to everyone else in the community. I find it extraordinarily important to be a self-advocate because we put a human face on this issue, this invisible disability. We put a human face on it. We're inviting people to talk to us and get to know us and maybe understand autism a little bit better. You know, the big thing that moved our nation towards the LGBT community's way of thinking to acceptance wasn't that their message was compelling or profound or anything like that. It was because so many individuals in our society personally knew someone of that community, was able to talk to them. They humanized it, put a human face on it. It's a lot harder to discriminate when you have loved ones who are a part of that community, you know, and I think it made people more open-minded and accommodating and accepting. I think the same sort of thing can be true for autism and neurodiversity. You know, if people can't name a single person they've ever talked to who are autistic, then it's just some other thing out there. But if they can think of concrete examples in their own lives, people that they care about, people that they have a relationship to. It makes them more accommodating and accepting. So my advice that I would give to autistic self-advocates after I say, thank you so much for being you, we need you out there, you're fighting the good fight, is, you know, I would suggest you've spent your whole life studying yourself. Most ASPEs have this in common, right? We figure out pretty early on, there's something different about me, or everybody doesn't make sense. They don't seem to think the way I do. So we spend a lot of time and effort trying to enumerate, trying to puzzle out, well, what about me is different than everybody else? So you are an expert on yourself. You can always say, look, autism is a spectrum. It's a broad range. There are autistic people, you know, like, for example, I'm pretty good at math. There are autistic people out there who can't handle algebra, and yet they're still brilliant. Temple Grandin is a PhD, has revolutionized the cattle industry. She was like the OG of autism self-advocacy. She's just a towering intellect and a powerful person. She struggles with algebra. She has difficulty doing, you know, what I consider to be fairly simplistic math. There's some big differences between me and her. So you can say, you know, I don't represent all of autism, but I'm an example of autism. And in a lot of ways, we're very different from each other. And we're also human beings and all the complexity that that brings. But I can tell you about my struggles. I can tell you about my difficulties so we can understand each other better. And no one's ever going to have a perfect idea or a perfect handle on autism and all of its manifestations and all of its struggles. But just becoming aware of one of our struggles can make you a little bit more empathetic towards the group as a whole and a little bit more open-minded. You know, just the simple fact, and a lot of people go through their lives never having come face-to-face with this, just the fact that other people's brains can work differently. We have different operating systems. And so what's easy for you could be extraordinarily complex and difficult for me, and vice versa. Just coming face-to-face with that and recognizing it and understanding it can make you a little bit more aware that different minds think differently and to be a little bit more accommodating or accepting because of it. So that's a huge service. You know, just making people aware that there are these individuals among them who see the world through very different eyes, who struggle with things that they're not even aware of, to just kind of open their eyes a little bit and make them a little bit more accommodating and accepting of that. You know, one of the great things I've found as a general rule of all human beings is by nature, we want to be a part of a herd. We want to be a part of a group, and we want to care about other members of that group, and we want to look out for them. And if we can figure out a way to help another member of the group flourish, that's something we would love to do. It makes us feel good to support each other and back each other up. And when we're working together as a unit and we're, you know, accommodating and supporting each other. And you know, if you have a cognitive weakness and I happen to have a strength in that area and I can step in and help you and I can shore you up and lend you some of my strength, that's something that you're grateful for. It's something that I enjoy doing, and vice versa. You know, that's the whole point of our species. You know, you take one human being and you stick it on an island, it's kind of pathetic. You know, any natural predator that can come along can eat it. You know, it can get too cold or too hot, or, I mean, we're just kind of pathetic as an animal. But you get a herd of us working together, we dominate the planet, we put people on the moon, we're capable of so many amazing things, and it's because of our inherent ability to work together and rely on each other for our unique talents and gifts.
You know, that's so well put, and I think that is one of the challenges that is happening in the work world, is we don't look at melding together the unique gifts of the different people to accomplish the goal. We somehow think every person coming in should have the complete range of all the talents, which we know is not true. You know, and I think that, you know, again, in the tech world, you know, when I look at these different job postings, what's almost always on it? I mean, there's a whole bunch of tech stuff, which certainly falls well within my realm. And then there's generally things such as able to talk to senior management, able to talk to leaders from other companies, able to, which, you know, I'm able to handle it, you'd be able to handle it, but there's certainly lots of autistic and particularly ASPE kind of people that you would not put them in front of senior management. That just would not be a smart idea. But
yes, and I think you're I think you're touching on something fundamentally important. So how do we go forward? How do we make this a better society? How do we integrate these people?
Right.
First of all, for autistic individuals, we do need to learn something about social camouflage. We do need to learn something about masking. It's extraordinarily important for me to understand that I have to be careful what I say or how I say it, because neurotypicals are exceptionally fragile. It is really easy to profoundly hurt their feelings and emotions and to destroy a relationship before it has a chance to get off the ground. It's important for me to know that. It's important for me to know this bizarre truth that people can be hurt by simple facts. You can share a fact with someone and it can devastate them. I have to understand that. I have to be cognizant and aware of that. So I need some training. As an autistic individual, I need some training so I can be careful about what I say and where I say it and how I say it. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be complicated. A lot of it's not going to make sense. You know, I'm probably a little bit overweight. I'm probably like 15, 20 pounds overweight. You know, if a stranger walked up to me and said, you know, you're kind of fat, I would say, yeah, I need to lose about 20 pounds. You know, I have to understand if I walk up to a neurotypical person and say that, they're upset, they're right. offended, they're like a fight has started. You know, I had difficulty as a kid understanding this, that people could be injured by facts, because I could not be injured by facts. Facts did not bother me. So for the autistic people, they have to receive some training. They have to have some frank conversations. They have to try to make an effort not to injure people. And I think most of them will, because once you don't have to understand why someone gets upset. If you understand the simple fact that this particular phrase could be very damaging to this person, we're decent human beings too. We don't want to hurt people. We don't want to offend people. And so we need to do some training and work on some of our social camouflage so we're not accidentally injuring people and we're not accidentally upsetting or attacking people unintentionally. Now, on the flip side, neurotypicals need to understand that social camouflage for us is difficult and complicated and baffling. And they have to understand that that's something that we struggle with. So when we do start to slip up, they need to be cognizant and not just immediately jump down our throats and not just immediately berate us. They need to understand that if I'm being a bit of a jerk, there's a good chance I don't intend to be a jerk. Call me out on it. Confront me and say, hey, what you said there was a little rude, or I think it was a little uncouth, or I think it came across as an attack. And then when I get that feedback, I need to immediately go, oh, that wasn't my intent, unless it was. You know, if I was trying to be a jerk, I could say, yeah, I'm mad at you and I'm trying to hurt your feelings. But the vast majority of times, it's going to be like, oh, I did not intend to do that. That's not how I meant to say that. I apologize. I didn't want to hurt your feelings. I was just trying to share something with you. I didn't realize that could be offensive. So that sort of dialogue, in other words, we need to meet somewhere in the middle. Asking an autistic individual to build up a skill set to equal yours or mine is just absurd. We can't demand that of the autistic community. That takes, in cases, years or decades of hard work and effort, and it's extremely complicated and frustrating. But they should learn something about the way neurotypicals work, even if it's only, oh, I should be careful not to talk to someone about their weight, or talk to them about the fact that I think they're ugly or something like that. Even that can go a long way. And then the neurotypicals, we need to train them that, hey, these folks have struggles with these. Recognize that. So when they're being a jerk, recognize there's a good chance it's not intentional. And try to help them and try to accommodate them and try to explain to them, you know, why that was offensive. Or just even the simple fact, don't just assume. You know, a group of neurotypicals, if you're upset, you can take it on faith that everybody just knows you're upset.
Right.
You get so used to the nonverbal communication. When somebody says something that you're not liking, you're used to other neurotypicals stopping and going, oh, but I can see this is a sensitive subject, or maybe I should change or something. When we blaze on, when it's obvious to you that you're upset, recognize maybe we don't know that. Maybe you have to come out and say the obvious, you're upsetting me. And that could be a profound, you know, lightning bolt from the sky. We might not have any clue, and just recognize, because it's obvious to everyone else, it might not be obvious to us. Recognize that, and I think you'll have a much more fulfilling and engaging conversation and interaction with people, the autistic community.
I agree with that so much. The way I like to put it is, it's not that I don't care about the other person's feelings of whom I'm talking to. I mean, I do care about them. I don't want to hurt their feelings. That's not my intention, as you say, most of the time. I mean, you know, once in a while, maybe, but not normally. But I don't even think about their feelings as I'm having the discussion. My mind is all wrapped up in the facts, the whatever, trying to put it into a phrasing that will work with the particular audience I'm talking to at the moment. It's not thinking about how will they react when I say X, Y, Z. I'm thinking about how can I say it in a way that they could actually understand it, not how will they react to that understanding.
Yes. I remember when I was 19 years old, I was a young soldier living in an apartment. I had a next door neighbor, a young couple, 18-year-old wife had just given birth to a baby, and it was a difficult birth. So they had to use this suction thing to help get the baby out. And it shaped the baby's head like a banana, but curved sideways. You've seen the movie Alien? The baby's skull kind of looked like that. Now, the baby's perfectly fine. An infant's skull is very malleable. You know, you can just sort of like gently massage it. By the time this baby was 6 months old, it looked like a perfectly normal, happy, healthy baby. Didn't affect the baby negatively in any way. But she comes into my house when she came home from the hospital with this baby with a banana head. And she walks up to me and she says, "What do you think of my baby?" And I said, "By God, that is the ugliest thing I've ever seen in my life." She instantly exploded into tears and ran wailing out of my apartment. And I stood there in shock for about 30 seconds because it did not occur to me that that would hurt her feelings or upset her. She asked me my opinion and I shared it with her. And now today, telling that story is a little bit difficult because from that day to this, I understand neurotypicals much better. Today, I understand I profoundly hurt her feelings. She wasn't asking me for my opinion of her baby. She was reaching out for another human being. She wanted me to say something to the effect of, "It's a beautiful baby. Everything will be okay. You know, you're not a failure as a mom. Your baby has value." That's really what she was asking of. And instead, I callously, deeply upset and offended her. And I'm horrified that I did that. I'm horrified now because, like you said, I now have the understanding of it. And in hindsight now, if anybody comes up with a baby, no matter how ugly or misshapen it is, I'm going to tell them that's a beautiful baby because I understand that's what they're seeking. That's what they're looking for. I understand that now. I didn't understand it then.
Yes, I'm with you. It falls into my rule of the tribe. Never insult another tribe member over one of their own, you know, direct family.
Can I add an addendum to that?
Sure.
All human beings are a part of your tribe.
Exactly. I agree. They're all part of the tribe. I just think we have a couple different tribes by nature. We have the tribe like us, and we have the tribe like neurotypicals. But in this world, we have to interact as if we're one tribe, and that's where, obviously, the rubs come.
Right.
Well, you know, this has been absolutely wonderful, and I've had just such a great time talking with, you know, you and I from having been together before know we could talk for many more hours and still not run out of interesting things to chat with. But I know we all have schedules and plans and such. Dave, if somebody wanted to reach out to you or to the Frist Center, what's the best way for them to contact you in the center?
Yeah, absolutely. So our website is vu.edu/oneword, autism and innovation. So that's vu.edu/autism and innovation. I imagine if you Google the Frist Center for Autism and Innovation, you're going to find us. We have a very active social media. We're very active on Instagram. We have a very active website that we frequently update. Most of my staff are on the spectrum, sort of a proud personal coup for me. But that also means that they're using their autism to great effect. So our communications director is a brilliant young woman on the spectrum. She is.
And I have to interrupt you, but because she is phenomenal. I've worked with her. You've put, you know, obviously her and I together and working on some projects, and the insight she was able to bring was incredible. I just have to praise her because the insight she brought, while it was possibly things I didn't want to hear, her insight was amazing, especially from the standpoint of female autism, which we didn't get into, but I think we'll probably both agree it manifests quite differently than male autism tends to.
Yeah, there are a lot of similarities. There are a lot of common struggles that Claire and I both suffer, but there are also some important gender differences. You're absolutely right about that. So that's one of the reasons why I feel like it was such a coup to get an important female voice into our efforts and stuff, because sometimes occasionally she has a perspective that I might overlook. And plus, I have two daughters on the spectrum, so I'm just personally intellectually curious at what sort of struggles they have will be different than mine. I want any sort of leg up on that I can to try to be a more effective dad. But yeah, they can Google that. They can look up our information. Anyone who's in the Nashville area is welcome to schedule an appointment and sit down. One of the great perks of my job is I get to sit down with my people and talk to them and explore what programs and stuff we have and try to figure out what sort of resources I can point them to help them. Sometimes it's just to sit down and chat. You know, one of the most astounding things for me is most Aspies that I meet have never spoken to another Aspie.
At least not knowingly. And I mean, they may have, but
right. Not knowingly, not intentionally, yes. Not knowingly. Now they've, for those who are diagnosed as a child, they've met other people on the spectrum, but it might be like in a special ed class with people who are nonverbal or with severe intellectual disabilities. And they'll come to me and they'll say, I don't have a lot in common with those people. I'm like, yeah, but you do have a people out there. You got to meet them and chat with them. I promise you it's worth doing.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a community that we need to embrace. And one thing I like to say about it that is unfortunate is, unlike the LGBT community, as you mentioned, that was able to get visibility and recognition through the visibility, we just don't have enough good social skills to be a visible society.
That's changing.
It's getting better. I agree. It's getting better.
I predict that is to come. I absolutely predict that. I predict that is to come.
Well, the things you're doing, the podcast like this, the stuff all the major companies are doing with the production of the media for general distribution about their programs, you're right. It's one of those things coming. We're just 20 years behind the LGBT community because they organized better.
By the way, if you have some listeners who are not local to the Nashville area and would still like to meet, I do virtual meetings as well.
Oh, thank you. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I've helped people. Most of the people I help are local in the Nashville area, but I've helped people in Florida and New Jersey. I've even talked to a couple people in Europe and Britain.
Oh, way cool. Way cool. That's so nice for you to offer that, out to everybody. I know it's certainly, it's very demanding on your time. And again, from having worked with you, I know time is not something you have an excess of to.
Yes. But that being said, I would do this for free. I enjoy it that much, and so I'm very fortunate that I get paid to do this because I do have bills and kids to feed. But it is an absolute joy to talk to people about this issue, and it's one of my obsessions is understanding autism, understanding neurotypicals and stuff. And so it's an obsession I regularly get to feed. And so if you've got anyone out there who feels like there's something the center could do for them, or they need help, or they just want someone to talk to, I would be delighted to talk to them. And I have a very busy schedule because I talk to so many of those people, and I consider that to be a part of my job. So I am gainfully employed while I'm doing that. Don't feel like you're going to be wasting my time. Understand that, like, helping you is my job. So please reach out and let's start a conversation. Email is a really good way to do that, and they can find my email address on the website.
I will actually take and put all of that information, both the Frist Center webpage and your email address, right down in the show notes so that it's easy and people don't have to, go searching for it. And I would also say, how about employers that are interested in getting involved? Is that somebody that you'd be interested in contacting?
Yes, absolutely. So a lot of, obviously the bulk of our work with companies right now are with a variety of local, national, and international companies who are committed to like forming some sort of neurodiverse program. But we do occasionally hear from companies that are like, hey, this has just come on my radar and I want to be a part of that. Yeah, they're a very important part of the conversation. Literally anyone. Okay, if you're a human being who pushes air through your mouth to stay alive and you've heard about this issue and you want to know more about it or you want to see if there's something you can do to help, it literally takes a village. Our success is because we have different members of the community coming to us. They're usually looking for help in some way, or they think they have an idea of some way to fix it, or they want to help. Most of them are both. Most of them want to help. They have something, but they also are looking for help in some way. And we're delighted and thrilled to talk to all of them. Our success is because the village is working together, and we are the most collaborative people on the planet. This problem is never going to be solved. I'm never going to kick my feet up on the desk and throw my hands behind my head and say, well, nailed it. It's done. No, there's always more we could be doing. There's always more people that we could be helping. And that happens by us having conversations and getting together and planning things out and working it out.
Yeah, and I know your whole program is super collaborative, not only with the business world, but with other major academic institutions, with government entities. I'm definitely, from my standpoint, familiar. You work with the whole gamut of what it takes to make employment work in this world. Mm. So absolutely great. I so much appreciate it, Dave. I hope we can have you back in the future, particularly if you've got something, big or major coming up that you want to talk about. We'd love to have you back because you do bring so much, so much focus on this. And obviously you're deep into the Autism at Work movement. And a lot of people aren't even familiar with it yet. So you're an amazing resource for them.
Catch you up. Let's see. We got a $3 million grant to support graduate students doing autism-related research. And we're going to use that grant actually to hire a lot of autistic grad students working on autistic research. So that was a real coup for us. I'm really excited about that. And we just got a $1 million grant to do autism-related research that leads to commercialization of some sort of product or something that helps neurodiversity or autism in the workforce. So those are two of some of the latest news items that just came out in the last few months.
Wow. So you're not just doing academic-y kind of things. You're doing real impactful things that touch the real world and, make a difference today.
Yeah. If it's related to autism and neurodiversity in the workforce, however tentatively or tangentially it's related to that, we're interested in it, and we're looking for program solutions and so forth.
Perfect. So everybody that is out there that hears this, if you know somebody or you are one of those people that fall under those categories, just look in the show notes and reach on out to the Frist Center and to Dave, and they'll take advantage of your knowledge and help share their knowledge with you. We hope that you've enjoyed another episode of Life in the Neurotypical Universe. Please, if you enjoyed this, share it with your friends. Go take their phone and subscribe them. Heck, it will help us all out. If you want to know more about neurodiversity or have any questions for me, you can reach me at my website, timgoldstein.com, where I'll be more than glad to help you as best I can to navigate through the neurotypical universe.